taking your relationship to the next level. This is Passion with Dr. Lori.
Welcome to Passion, a show about love, sex, and relationships. I'm Dr. Lori Battito. I'm a clinical psychologist. I have a specialty in sexuality. Tonight on the program, we actually focus on helping you through your difficult times, whether you're suffering from a sexual issue, I'm here to help, or depression or anxiety or any other mental health issue and its impact on your life, on your relationship. Once a month, I'm joined by several other therapists who practice with various approaches so that we can offer you different views, different ways of treating various difficulties and just getting different, opinions. And I just think it's different perspectives and approaches, really. So we have Rebecca Puterman. She's a psychotherapist. She specializes in cognitive behavioral therapy. She's here. She is a social worker by trade. We have Sandra Reich, who is a psychotherapist as well. She is the clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression. So you can guess what her specialty might be. And actually, both of you work, with anxiety, especially, and depression, which seems to be something that afflicts so many people. I almost, like, everybody I know, there's in every circle, there's like somebody's got some problem with anxiety or depression at some point in their life. I don't even know what the statistics are. Do you?
Very high. It's the biggest mental health challenge in North America at the moment. That's how big anxiety is.
You think it's the way we live?
Yeah. And I think that we're seeing it a lot more in our kids now than we used to. Pressures are getting bigger and bigger. So, yeah, unfortunately, the numbers are not going down. They're going up. So we got to look at that.
Anxiety in kids. I know, Rebecca, you treat young adults and teenagers and with a lot of anxiety as well. You're seeing more and more of that, I imagine,
over
the years.
I'm seeing more of that. And I'm seeing so many other issues related, not only just anxiety, but depression as well. So everyone has clusters of different types of symptoms, and sometimes I can't even decide what is it that they have.
Right.
But I do know that it's harder and harder for people to face challenges and feel that they can get through their day.
I wonder what it's about, what it says about our society now.
Well, we do encourage a lot of this sort of go, go, go society, and we do it with our kids too. I don't know what goes on in your households, but there's a lot of activities at my kids' schools and things you're supposed to do. And it's hard. You have to keep some time for yourself, and that's hard to do when you're being, the barometer is how much are you getting done? We were talking in the car, busy is the new way of saying you're so important.
Mm.
Maybe not.
You don't want to be that important.
No.
Not so important you don't take time for yourself to breathe a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Breathe a little bit and take time for people just to relate without having a phone. And just recently we've decided you go out, there's no phones coming out with us.
Good.
And for 2-3 hours, like a few hours a day, just put the phones in drawers. In my room I come home and it's just not to be touched because not enough people are making eye contact. And I think if you don't know how to make a phone call, if you don't know how to answer a call, that's where social anxiety develops. And there's so many other reasons.
That's true, right?
That's actually a really good point. And that's probably a bit of the answer of where anxiety is increasing. Electronics,
absolutely.
Electronics, electronics.
I wouldn't have thought that, actually,
good
that
point.
That electronics is it could be the source or the cause of anxiety. But now it makes so much sense, the social anxiety.
You don't have to leave your house. You don't have to go to a store to buy anything and ask, do you have it in this size? You order everything online.
Yeah.
You don't have to leave your house and live a very fruitful life, apparently.
And
have to tell you, as a busy person, I like doing a lot of things online.
I do too.
But it's not isolating, but it's,
It actually, by the way, I'm so glad you brought this up because it also increases dopamine in your brain. And the problem with kids is when they do a lot of electronics and they get off the electronics, real life is not as exciting.
Right.
So then all of a sudden you're like, what's this energy in
Next.
Me? That's anxiety.
Yeah.
So I need something, I need something, I need something. And if there's nothing to fill it, it creates some level of anxiety because it's not related to anything.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's not like I'm anxious about tests or I'm anxious about homework. I'm just anxious.
Yes. And then, take it further. Telephones, iPads, computers. It doesn't stop once you get home from school. We used to finish coming home from school when we were younger. That was it. It was happy days or something that you'd watch on
cartoons,
TV.
Cartoons. And then play outside.
Soap operas that were still on, maybe. But you didn't get bullied or you didn't get talked to by anyone else. And you didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
So just watching, I had two people today tell me just looking on Facebook created so much anxiety for them. Because they saw what other people were doing and what they were not doing and not capable of doing. So there's so many reasons why social media, why computers, why telephones can create both depression and anxiety, in my perspective.
Yeah, that's, I agree. I've even had comments from, like, friends, you know, I look at what you're doing and I get tired, you know, or I feel useless or whatever. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I don't know what kind of friend would say that to you, but I think you should change friends immediately. Just kidding. But just to add on to that point, because I want to get off your point, the children, one of the first protocols we do is to remove electronics when they have anxiety, just to get that out there.
Okay.
That's to lower the amount of time. Electronics really should be a privilege, not a right in children.
Huh.
Yeah. But I was trying to divert the topic.
Yes.
Yeah, because she was talking about me looking at her social media.
And I wasn't Dr. just talking Lori. About you. I have other friends who like
you. I thought it was all about me.
It wasn't about you.
That's a different psychological problem.
It's like another friend of mine says, I feel lazy when I look at your Facebook
I'm
stuff,
hardly
right?
surprised.
So, okay, but like not everybody can work at the same warp speed, let's just say. It's like it's not everybody's in everybody's abilities. Yeah. Like everybody has their...
Plus, we're only getting a snapshot of your life,
to be
fair.
And that's the other thing I can't stand is that everybody makes assumptions that because everything you post, everything's like life is perfect or, you know, sure, you post when you're doing things. So it always seems like you're busy. But what about all the times I'm just sitting outside reading a book? You know, I don't post that.
Yeah.
Well, right?
I think you need to.
I should.
Everyone would love to see Dr. Lori reading a book. Don't you
sitting
think?
Sitting by the pool reading
I'd
a book.
I'd love to see that.
I can do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Right, Rebecca? Sometimes.
Yes, yeah. I've seen it. I've witnessed it.
That's right. We have our therapist panel tonight, Rebecca Puterman and Sandra Reisch in studio with us talking about mental health. One thing I want to really address too is the issue of toxicity. It's a word we are throwing around a lot these days. You know, there's books, toxic parenting, toxic relationships, toxic, toxic, toxic. So, you know, we need to know what's the poison. like, okay, is everything toxic or in moderate? Like, what is toxic? So coming, and I know, of course, you know, as a therapist, you see people who come from really difficult backgrounds who then reproduce a lot of stuff in their romantic relationships and in their own families. And so we know there's a generational effect, you know, we know that it carries forward. So maybe tonight we can actually talk a little bit about that and, you know, toxicity in our relationships and how our toxic backgrounds are dysfunctional. That's another word, because now we hear toxic. Before it was dysfunctional.
And now it's toxic.
Right? And now it's toxic. But it's the same thing. It's that we're talking about dysfunction. And then when you start talking to people, it's like, but didn't we all come from some form of dysfunction? Like, it really? So maybe we need to define what is it to have toxic parents, or to be in come from a dysfunctional home? Because I get the obvious. Okay, you come from a home where your parents are an alcoholic and unavailable. Clearly dysfunctional because you're not getting parented. So any situation where you're not getting parented as a child is toxic or dysfunctional. But any other definitions you want to throw out there, Rebecca?
Yes, yeah. I'm thinking, dysfunctional, there's one part of parents who can still be addicts and can still provide a lot of love.
Right.
So it's not,
not about the love.
It's not about the love. It's about the put downs. It's about the destroying the person that the child is and creating a sense of, like, destroying a self-esteem and confidence. And of course, it's hard for kids to understand what confidence is, what love is. If you don't do this for me, do you love me? But I think it's to be understood. Your past needs to be understood and not only thought of. They weren't available, because sometimes they weren't available. They worked really hard. Immigrant kids, they grew up with very few parents around because they're working all the
non-stop,
time.
Nonstop,
but that doesn't mean they didn't love them.
And it doesn't mean it was necessarily dysfunctional.
Exactly.
So we're going to try and figure this out tonight, and we'll continue this. Toxic families, dysfunctional families, how we carry that forward with Sandra Reisch and Rebecca Puterman.
The late latest trends and hottest topics, love and sex, handled honestly and with passion. Here's Dr. Lori, CJAD 800.
Tonight on Passion, the therapist panel. Every month, the last Monday of every month, I bring together some very brilliant minds in the therapy field, I believe. And we talk, we put all our heads together, we try and help out, we focus on mental health issues, not just sexuality, although if you have questions about that, that's fine too. We can talk about that since that's my specialty. But I also work, you know, with many other issues in terms of mental health, as I am a trained clinical psychologist. We also have Sandra Riche and Rebecca Puterman, both psychotherapists, and both actually specialize in anxiety and depression. So they can really give you some good feedback if there are any issues you want to discuss with us. But one of the things I thought we would talk about tonight is toxic parenting or family dysfunction, but how we take it forward. I mean, because most of us, you know, nobody's had a perfect childhood. Rebecca, you mentioned many of us grew up with parents who were not available. Why? Because I grew up with immigrant parents. They came to this country, worked really hard. I hardly ever saw my dad for, you know, years. He was a salesman on the road and away and away and away. So it was,
it's what you do.
You know, it's what you do. My mother worked full time. Like it was a survival thing, right? But never did, still felt loved all the time. Like that wasn't an issue. But today, parents who are not there or not available, or like there's a, you know, what's the difference between abandoned, like feeling abandoned as a child, and something else, right? Like the way I might have grown up with parents who were not so available, but still very loving.
But you said the key thing. You said you felt loved. And it also sounded like it was the parents had a clear role and you had a clear role. If those things are in place, then it's one thing to say your parents aren't around a lot, but you feel sick with something that's called a secure attachment,
right?
Which is very important. And that predicts how you're going to be in relationships later. On the other hand, if the boundaries weren't clear, if the role of the parent wasn't clear, which is the I want to be my child's best friend, or sometimes, you know, violating, not always a sexual violation, but there's emotional violation, which we don't put enough attention on, then that child does not grow up with the skill set to have a healthy relationship. You need to learn it at home first. There's an old saying in psychology that says, whatever work your parents didn't do, you will have to do. So when we raise kids, we have to know that we're watching, that we keep an eye on our work, because whatever we don't do, they'll have to do.
We need to focus on that, though. We need to be aware. And that's, Rebecca, you said it. It's like you've got to understand yourself so you don't repeat patterns. That's unfortunately, right. Patterns do get repeated.
Absolutely.
You know, how many people grow up in, let's say, alcoholic homes, grow up to be alcoholics.
Or fall in love with alcoholics,
that's right?
And they can tolerate it because they know what it's like.
Familiar.
So they're not scared of it, exactly.
Right. That familiarity. Okay, so let's go back to that dysfunction then. Let's just say a child grows up in a toxic environment, unpredictable parents. You know, that's really what you're talking about, the boundaries, right? So a lot of unpredictability. They learn how to handle unpredictability. They learn
drama.
How to handle drama. Like they're used to hearing it.
Stress.
So it's part of their, you know, part of their understanding of life, let's say. So when they meet somebody romantically that shows any of those characteristics, they're like, oh yeah, I could deal with this. This is no biggie, right?
I recognize that. I think when they meet someone like that, and actually there's research that shows that there's a part of their brain that goes ding, ding, ding. Oh my God, what I call the feeling is like a slurp feeling, like I'm very attracted to this person because he or she reminds me of home. But that's all unconscious.
Right.
So you then end up replaying your past, hoping for unconsciously a different ending, but unfortunately it's the same ending.
How many of us have repeated our parents' marriage, let's say?
Oh boy.
But just to say, it's very, very similar with abuse, violence against a spouse, domestic violence, right? And children who grow up from working with women in domestic violence, every girl will say, I will never be a victim of violence. And every boy will almost say, I will never hurt a woman in my life, if that's what they've seen in their home. And it's incredible to see how much of that gets repeated.
Even though consciously they say it out loud.
They never want to see it because they were witness to it and they experienced it. So that creates so much insecurity in them. And that's what we're talking about, I think, when we reliving in your relationships now, I think when you're growing up insecure, you don't know that sense of security.
Yeah.
And like you said, the healthy attachment.
And those who forget the past are condemned to relive it. That's a very true statement for many things. And I really appreciate what you're saying, is that if we don't look at ourselves honestly, of course we're going to say we'll never hit a woman, or we'll never hit, you know, do that's something like our parents. But that's not enough.
It's not enough.
You got
to
go
deeper. So it's not enough to just be aware and to say, I'll never be that kind of parent. What ends up happening, of course, is we look at ourselves and go, oh my goodness, I just did what my mother did.
That's
or I
right.
just did what my father did. 514-800. I just realized we're having such great conversation. I forget to give out phone numbers and text. So please, you're welcome to text in, of course. I make it sound like you're not, but you are welcome. 514-800. 514-790-0800. My big apologies to all of you. 514-800. 514-790-0800.
It was a good time. 0800.
I'm telling people we're here to help, but I'm not giving them the numbers to cut. You know, it's like,
you're just
hello.
Very passionate.
That's not going to work well for people, unfortunately. Gee. All right. But you know what? We do have Karen on the line. So who has a question? Hey, Karen.
Hi, Dr. Lori. Wonderful show
as usual.
Oh,
thanks, Karen.
I wanted to chime in just to say that our neurology is wired for repetition, right? Which we've been discussing. And is it not like completely high time that they start teaching just the basic psychology, behavioral studies in the school curriculum so that it's common knowledge and we all know, you know, everyone gets along better, functions better, because it's really epidemic right now, this whole, these anxiety related issues out there. And I see it in the escalation of people's behavior, aggression, violence, you know, it's all around us.
It's life management skills. It's teaching. It's the same way we don't teach kids in school about healthy relationships.
Yes.
You know, like a lot of the kids in school might have witnessed unhealthy relationships in their own homes. And so there's nothing to counterbalance that. There's nobody saying these are healthy relationships. This is what it looks like. And maybe they're afraid that kids are going to say, oh, my goodness, I don't live, you know, my parents aren't healthy. I don't know what the issue is here. Certainly time wise. And, you know, they don't even teach about sexuality hardly. So how are we expected to learn about, you know, healthy relationships?
Sexuality, we know, has just totally been left behind in education. But this is like basic, like you said, life management skills.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't just common knowledge on the signs of, you know, we see all these escalations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessary if everybody's more informed. There's certain areas where, you know, as a society, we're more informed and we intervene.
You're
but
right.
When it comes to mental health, it's still just not, you know, where it should be, right?
Yeah, no, you're right, Karen. And actually, too bad Stefan isn't here. Stefan Bensusan, who's our regular panelist, and we all wish him well. He has a bit of a fever. So he actually goes into elementary schools, and he teaches now groups for mindfulness meditation groups in elementary schools. So schools are now paying attention. They're hiring people like him to come into the schools and work with the kids at that level. So I don't want to say it's not happening. It's happening minimally, but it is happening. And I think we're finally understanding the importance of it because we're seeing the devastating effects, really, like epidemics of you know, anxiety in children. This is ridiculous. What happened to childhood, right? It's like childhood is supposed to be fun, not full of anxiety.
But just as this whole public awareness issue, we have, you know, next door to us, we have a head of state that is behaving in ways that would be reprimanded
Let's not go
in
there.
Any kind of institution in regular society, right?
Yeah, I'm not going political tonight. I tell you, if you get me going, Karen, you'll never get me off
but
the air.
I didn't mention names.
We have no idea who you're talking about.
You know, that they say the fish smells, what is it, rotten from the top. The fish smell, you know, the rotten smell comes from the top.
From the top, yeah.
But seriously, what Stefan is doing, I know what you mean. It's like a drop in the bucket.
Yeah,
but
it's
there,
a start.
There are a lot
it's
of small
start.
Initiatives going on.
Yeah. Well, we could just have to do more. You know, you change the world one person at a time, to tell you the truth. I've learned that in my career. One person at a time, ripple effects. It takes a long time to change, but it is happening. So I want to feel hopeful about all of this. I our society is evolving and we just have to catch up with the mental health, that the healthy part of it all. We just have to, you know, catch up and teach the right things. So let's all do our part. And that's what the best we can hope for. more. Let's teach our own kids about all of this. If they're not teaching in the schools, we do it. Let's give our kids the stress management skills and the and life skills and what have you. And let's teach them by example. So let's start with us, right? Karen, I think we're on the right track. Thanks so much for calling in. Do appreciate it. 514-800 to text in, or 514-790-0800 if you would like to call in with a question. That was a great call. I mean, it's so important that we, you know, that we do have a societal
responsibility.
And she was saying, like, you know, we're getting a lot of calls from schools now about anxiety problems. We get a lot of calls. So we'll teach them stress reduction. But what Karen was saying also is, what about learning about the neurobiology, and what about understanding a little bit about boundaries and those things before you get anxiety? Anxiety is
the
symptom.
How does your brain work? How does the brain function in very age-appropriate ways?
The same way we
teach sex in age-appropriate ways, we can teach mental health in age-appropriate
ways.
And
give people options to break the cycle.
We need to. We really need to do that. This is my therapist panel tonight, talking about dysfunction, toxicity, and how we carry that forward into relationships. And anything else you want to talk about, whether it's stress management, anxiety, depression, a sexual issue, relationship issue, we are here. Sandra Reich, a psychotherapist and clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression. Don't let me forget to talk about her lectures, free lecture series that's coming up next week. We also have Rebecca Putterman, psychotherapist who specializes in cognitive behavioral therapy.
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Your relationship's on the line. Connect with Dr. Lori now. 514-790-0800. Passion. News Talk Radio. CJAD 800.
It's like an old song completely redone. Love it. It's my favorite. I think I started with that song 18 years ago. That was my initial song, which was interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so we have the therapist panel here. We have Sandra Reich, who's a psychotherapist and the clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression. And we have Rebecca Putterman, also a psychotherapist specializing in this area. Before we go on to continue talking about toxic parenting, please tell us about our lecture series here that you're holding, because it's free, it's informative, and if you guys are available, go.
Well, thank you. Once a year, we open our doors, and I have all the therapists on my team speak about their specialty topic, be it anxiety, depression, emotions. I'm talking about relationships, and it's 100% free, and it's at the Brunswick Medical Center on October 3rd at 7 o'clock. The only thing is that we can only take 70 people in that room, so it really is first come, first serve. If you want to give us a call, find out more
information. Can you reserve? Reserving.
But
okay.
If you need any information, call us at 514-777-4530. But it's really, you've come. It's a nice night.
It's wonderful. It's nice to hear different topics. They're short. It's almost like a little...
TED Talk.
Exactly.
And we
We
like to meet the people too. We want to know what people are interested in. It helps us also. So please come in and come say hi. I'd love to meet you.
Yeah. All right. So doors open at what time?
6:45.
So line up, go get your spot.
Go on the website for details, helpforanxietydepression.com.
Excellent. So October 3rd, a free lecture series, a free night of lectures. So that's great. Especially if you're, you know, struggling with anxiety and depression and related stuff. So we're talking about how, and in fact, you know, a lot of people who grow up in toxic households or dysfunction, or I don't even know what to call it. Like neither of those words actually appeal to me. So I'm not sure if there's another word we can use.
Getting wounded?
You know?
No.
It's like, I don't know. Like, toxic is too strong for, you know.
Smoky rooms.
It's very
strong. I often say smoky rooms. Don't go into smoky rooms. So some of the rooms were smoky in your childhood.
Could
smoky
be,
rooms
yeah.
have carcinogens.
Yes, there can be. That's a good
there's
one,
always
yes.
carcinogens around. You just want to learn to avoid them.
It's just
them.
How much
the
of them,
is,
you know?
You know, I sort of see, I don't know anyone who hasn't.
That's why those words don't fit.
But there's
for
a
me.
Degree. There's a big degree.
Yeah,
I hear
it.
You. We've all faced dysfunction. I hear your point.
That's like, you know, when we talk about you know, people say, ah, this is full of chemicals or toxic, but only in quantity. Only
right.
It's only right. toxic in certain quantities,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
So
there's
it's
only
not
so much your body can take. So it's how much.
That's
how
right.
much smoke was in the room.
Right.
So if your parents weren't there, but they were loving,
right.
it's not the same carcinogens than if somebody sexually abused you.
That's right.
Not the same game, but there's still dysfunction in both of those situations. But there's a difference. It's how much can the body take in? It depends on the perception of the person. Your example. Perception is also, if when my client says, this happened to me, do you believe me? It doesn't even matter if it happened. If you believe it,
that's right.
That's your perception of your reality.
Right.
That's another factor.
And right. recently I came across a woman who was describing her childhood, and she said, yeah, I took showers with my father up until I was 15, and he would soap up my body. But she really went on to the next thing, and she said, I know it sounds strange, never really touched me in areas that he shouldn't or wasn't too intrusive, but I didn't think of it at all as a sexual assault in any way, abuse. And she's
I've known other people, by the way, I've known other people who, you know, there was a lot of nudity in the home, and
yes.
they took another father, daughter, whatever,
yeah.
showering. There was absolutely nothing sexual that was either interpreted or
exactly.
intended on the
right.
on either side.
Well, intention is a big factor.
Of course, intention is a big factor.
Because
and
it also
but
is
the
your
boundaries.
Normal. It's your normal also,
exactly.
so it could be inappropriate, and you could find it normal. Those
yes,
two could
sometimes
happen together
yes,
too.
That's quite true.
Yes,
but again, in terms of the impact. You know, if it was, if you didn't feel like there was a boundary violation, you know, sometimes the impact is not necessarily going to be, again, the level, you know.
You know, there's someone I know, a friend of mine, who recently told me that her mother would just tell her about her father's performance in bed. Well, that created
that's so much. Yeah.
Exactly. Kids shouldn't know about money issues, sexuality between parents. They shouldn't know that
right.
information.
That's right.
So when kids are being told that, it's a boundary.
That's a boundary violation.
That's a boundary
right
violation.
There.
And that brings the point of what if that client or that person listening says, but I didn't find it weird at all. It's still a boundary violation.
Exactly.
Just because you found it normal, that's going to lead to boundary issues in your relationship. So we have to be careful about somebody saying it was my normal doesn't
right.
mean it's okay.
That's right.
Yes.
And everybody has their, everybody who grew up in whatever home, that's their normal.
Exactly.
Until they find out otherwise.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
Until
that's
they
right.
realize,
oh, boy.
Not all families do this.
That's right.
Oh, that's not healthy.
I always tell my kids what we talk about in this house only works for us, not in anyone else's family.
Well, that's a great line.
But
no,
I tell them all
true.
The time. I said, and then when you go on, you do what you want. But this only works for me. I parent the way I want. But not. So when we talk about anything and everything, remember, when you go to someone else's house, it's not okay to talk about anything.
You know what? I think this was a perfect example. That's a great thing that you bring up. But like my kids, you know, my kids grew up in a home where we talked about sexuality a lot. Like it was just a normal part of every day.
You're Dr. Lori,
and, yeah,
after
well,
all.
You know, but we talked a lot about it. But when they, so I remember one specific thing, my daughter in kindergarten, I think it was not even kindergarten, it was pre-kindergarten, not even kindergarten, so like 4 and a half or something. And, you know, they were playing in the dolly corner, and some kid says, oh yeah, this is how babies are made. It's like made up some, it wasn't actually true. My daughter says, that's not true. This is how babies are made. And so that kid went home, told mom, you lied.
Uh-oh.
Babies are made this way because, you know, she told me. And then so that parent went to the teacher and was livid that my daughter had ruined this other girl's innocence,
tale.
You know?
Yeah.
And of course, so the teacher came to me and I said, look, what can I do? You know, the kids are going to learn stuff. So I had to have a discussion with my kids saying, look, you're going to have to keep certain information to yourself. Not everybody is prepared to hear it just yet. And some of the parents don't want their kids to know, even though you know. So when you talk about sexuality or how babies are made or all of that, how about, you know, you just keep it to yourself?
I think in grade 4, my daughter's teacher asked words that rhyme with corn. And people said born, torn. And my daughter said, porn.
Porn.
And
oh,
I was like,
no.
Oh. I was on the computer right away apologizing.
Well, or another, you know, again, like these are funny, you know, obviously
yeah.
these are very, very funny stories. But I just ran into my kid's kindergarten teacher the other day. And she goes, oi, the stories we used to hear. And because, you know, they would do the alphabet. And my daughter happened to get V, the letter V. So what do you think she says?
Vagina?
No, she didn't say vagina. Oh. She said vulva.
Oh.
And the teacher said, "What's that?" I mean, it got to, you know, so, and the kids certainly didn't know. The other kids had no clue what that is. So it had to, you know, discussion had to be had about what that was.
That's funny.
But anyway, so it goes to show you that
it depends what's normal. That's right.
And, you know, as long as, again, but that level, it's, we're talking.
Well, but there's a big variance here between what's different families have different styles. If they still fit into a like the example you gave, if it's something inappropriate, like discussing the sex life, no matter what the family is, that might be problematic.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't involve our kids. Our kids get to be kids, and parents have to stay in the parental role. And I don't know about in your practice, I'm sure you see this all the time. Parents have a hard time understanding this is a job. So you have to have your parent hat on.
That's right.
You can't, it's not the same as when you're hanging out with your friends. I find that's a common problem these days.
I do find that
too. You have to be a parent.
Yeah, you can't be your friend's.
Rules.
Well, again, you know,
you're
find
rule bound. You should be rule bound.
Yes,
and that's, structure,
and that's how real life works. You don't go to your job. Do you get paid?
Yeah.
No.
What?
Exactly. If you don't go to work, you don't,
get paid. Of course.
If you don't do your stop sign, you get a ticket. We need boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
We need tickets. Let's ticket the parents.
Well, we need police.
What kind of police? Coming up, we'll talk about how we have a really great text from somebody about how to get out of the victim mindset. So we'll talk about that.
Straight Talk, that's all inclusive. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
The therapist panel tonight on the program, Sandra Reich, psychotherapist and clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression, Rebecca Putterman, psychotherapist specializing in cognitive behavioral therapy. A couple of really great texts at 514-800. So one person asked, what age were your kids when you started talking about sex? You know, somebody asked my kids that question, like, when did you get the talk? And my kids say, we always knew about it. It's like there was no talk. It was just part of our upbringing, where from the day they were very, very little, we started like just naming body parts, you know. And then when I was pregnant, my then older daughter was asking questions about what was in my belly and how that got there. And so there were a lot of teachable moments. So from the time they could talk, like really from, you know, 1 year old, it's not about sex, the act of sex. It's about human sexuality. But it's way larger than just having a talk about having sex. What is sex? Like that came much later. But how babies were made, how they come into being, what is appropriate, not appropriate, what is private, what is not private, you know, bound, like about what is bad touching, good touching, secret touching, all of these things happen at a very young age. So,
and I think it's important to know that kids hear it. Like if you don't answer a question or if you don't share something, they think something's wrong with it.
Shame.
Of course. And,
exactly.
Of course. And that's, and I hear that all the time from clients.
So it's just important to know that even when you're explaining something, they don't really make sense of it at 5 years old or 6 years old.
And they'll ask the question over and over again anyway. It goes in one ear and out the other at some point.
So that's the whole thing. You can explain it, but they're not really grasping it anyways.
Right. Until their minds evolve more and more and more, then they want more information, which is, you know, makes perfect sense. So don't worry. Don't panic about giving your kids more information than they can handle, because they won't filter it anyway. It won't go in there. Texter writes, Dr. Lori, great show tonight. I'm happy I made the choice to give up a great career so I could be home for my daughters. Had children that had many activities. I was always there for them, so I never regret anything. And had happy children, and sex talk came from us at home. Great. And these are choices that you make. You have to be comfortable with your choice. Personally, I like the balance of going to work, you know, part-time and raising the kids part-time. For me, I had that flexibility in my career. I chose this career so I could have that flexibility, in fact. So that was, but we all make different choices and we just have to be good with our choices.
And the research shows that kids, really the thing they want the most is their parents to be happy. So what choice you make in terms of the quality of your life, if you're happy, then you're really present when you're there. You can be home all the time and not be present.
Well, that's quite true. In fact, now talk about cell phones and iPads and everything else that we, you know, may not be present for. So this text writes, I grew up in the Point and grew up in a toxic environment. I find myself falling into victim mode. How does one change this mindset? And I know each one of us in this room here has dealt with people who find themselves in victim role, in the victim mode, a way of thinking, because it's the most common thing that ends up in our offices.
Yes.
So go ahead.
I always get a little excited. You heard me breathing there. Well, first of all, the texter already, the fact that they could say that, that's progress too. Yeah. We all fall into victim role from time to time. We're all allowed an occasional pity party. I like a pity party, curl up in familial position,
Yeah.
eat
just
bad
not
food.
Too long. Yeah.
but eventually the next step is now what? Okay, so you had it rough. You had some bad stories in your life. There is a lot of bad things that happen. Now what? That's the question to the antidote to victim. Now what? What do I do now? And there's always options. And the antidote to victimization is choice. Right. And we have choices. As adults, we have choices. Isn't that great news?
It's great news.
Great news.
We do have choices.
I really like that news.
Yeah, I like that. It's what now? All right, so all of this crap happened. Now what? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think you have to unstick yourself from any label. So whether, you know, you grew up in a toxic family, yeah, it's your story. I'm really sorry you grew up in a toxic family because that's unhealthy. But now, as Sandra says, what are the choices you want to make? And how do you stop labeling yourself as someone who grew up in a toxic family? That was your story, and
that's
now
just
you
your
heal.
Story. But that's just only. But I always say that's only the certain
part.
Chapters
that's
of your.
Right.
You still have to write the rest of your book.
You live in the present instead of constantly living in the past. Which is once you heal and understand that past, and say, okay, that's just my story. It happened. I can't undo it. I can't take it back. I can't. I have to forge today and create some plans for the future.
And recognize that everybody has a book.
That's right.
Everybody has those initial few chapters written.
Yeah.
You can't unwrite them. Somebody wrote them for you.
Yeah.
But I look at our life as the chapters. Like if I'm 48, I'm on chapter 48. So what
all
is...
All right. What's like, coming up next,
exactly.
Right?
And the bad chapters make you who you are today.
That's right.
That's okay. The bad chapters make you who you are. So if you really think about it, if you turn your lemons into lemonade, you might not even want to change the past. I know I wouldn't, and I had some stuff. Right. I had some stuff. But it helped me be who I am today, and I'm grateful for it.
And I think that's important. I think it's all about the attitude that you present.
That's
and,
right.
You know, I think to get out of that victim mode also, there's a practice in the brain that has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize the work that is involved in changing the way you think. It's not just enough to say, just change the way you think. No, you know, you've got to practice it. You have to actually do it consistently, daily, multiple times a day, and change that ticker tape that goes on in your brain.
Well, and what's so great about this, we know now we can change the brain.
Yeah.
The brain is plastic. You can change the neuronal pathways simply through repetition. Okay, by saying it differently over and over again, you can change your brain. And if you can change your brain, you can change your life. So the texter who said she falls into victim, that's step one. She's owning it and she can change her life. And that's very good that she said that, in my opinion.
But I think like you, it's a good point. But I think like you said, it's work. And that's what you have to remember. It is work on a regular basis. If you want to have muscles, you can't stop after 3 months and then let it go because it atrophies. It's constant work. To reframe, redo.
I love that.
Remake a sentence.
It's hard work. Yeah. And we do see a lot of people who suffer from all of this stuff. And part of that is working hard at changing it and recognizing it and healing it. And it's not an easy thing to do.
And I think like we all have said here tonight, you're allowed to feel sad about things that happened. You're allowed to feel angry. You're allowed to feel jealous. But what you can't do is get stuck in that feeling, especially when it's a negative feeling. You just have to be very, very careful because then that's when the victim continues or the depression happens or the anxiety happens. Because yes, you can get really stressed in life and we're all stressed at some point.
Yeah.
And we all get sad at some point and we all get irritable and frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It's when one
it's
day
the degrees,
turns into the
right?
next.
Exactly. And also when we make that diagnosis, it's because it's been going on for weeks and months.
Exactly.
And sometimes I recognize people who've been actually suffering from anxiety for a lifetime, you know, for years, and they don't recognize it because it's their normal. Yeah. All the anxiety is there normal. They have no idea. I just spoke to a gentleman today who was like, thank you for diagnosing and putting me on the right track to getting medication that for the last, you know, 50 years of my life, I've been living not knowing that I was this anxious,
wow.
You know, and now I realize that, whoa. Like
that's
that
right.
Made a huge change. And it's not just about, obviously, just about the medication. There's many
work,
different things. There's
therapy,
work involved
yeah.
and recognizing it. So there's, you know, there's lots to do. And
stuff to read online, even if you want to. If you're not leaving your home, there's so much information online about everything.
There's a help out there. And I think that the reality is, as we're talking here, we're all in the helping profession. There is help out there for people. And you have to look for it. And we've got the three therapists here. You can go to the Order of Psychologists to find out where in your neighborhood, in your area, that you can get help. There's help through your CLSC. There's help through
Argyle Institute,
the Argyle.
On a sliding scale.
Yeah,
there's
many, many,
free.
Many options
yeah.
that people
Articles,
can explore
like you said.
That mm-hmm. they should. Yes, today there's so much written out there. So,
we're lucky.
Ladies, thank you so much. Rebecca,
you.
If we want to get in touch with you.
514-402-5526.
And Sandra, your center?
514-777-4530.
And also the website.
Helpforanxietydepression.com. Thank you, Dr. Lori.
Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
If anybody wants to get in touch with me, you could do that at drlori.com, drlaurie.com. Thank you to Brian Calasar in Master Control. Thank you to all of you for your texts, your questions, and for tuning in, of course. Coming up next, we have the comedy show with Joey Elias. We'll talk to you again tomorrow night. In the meantime, have a great rest of the evening. And remember to live your life with passion.